Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sacred conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join in if you haven't already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as topic suggestions for future programs. Go to www.usliftingus.com. You can reach the ULU community through the Members Only portal. When you register for the ULU community, please use the same name you use to join ULU. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion Brother Umpty. Tonight's topic is, it's time for a revolutionary theory. Peace, Brother Umpty. How are you doing tonight?
Greetings, Sister Q. I'm doing exceedingly well. It's good to hear you, and it's good to be with the family.
It's good to have you again. Brother Umpty, let's begin by defining terms. When you say a revolutionary theory, what is it that you mean?
Thank you for the question. That's it's actually two parts to that.
Okay.
And let me begin the conversation with a quote from our brother Amilcar Cabral, who was the revolutionary leader of the national liberation struggle in Guinea-Bissau. In an article, or actually in an address he wrote called The Weapon of Theory,
mm-hmm.
he presented some very powerful ideas to the first tricontinental conference of the peoples of Asia, Africa, and Latin America held in Havana, Cuba in January of 1966. So even though this is 60 years ago,
mm-hmm.
he had his finger on some issues that are so important that we have to revisit them and unpack what he was saying. He said, we would recall that every practice produces a theory. And that if it is true that a revolution can fail, even though it is based on perfectly conceived theories, and this is the important part that he goes on to say, nobody has yet made a successful revolution without a revolutionary theory. In other words, Cabral is arguing in his article that the greatest weakness that the national liberation struggles of the 1960s and 70s faced was their lack of a revolutionary theory. So there were a lot of groups in motion pursuing different programs and different agendas, but he said the greatest weakness that he saw was that there was not an overarching, overriding revolutionary theory that was guiding the work. And I think that holds true today. As we survey the condition of our people, certainly here in North America, but on the continent of Africa and throughout the diaspora, for the most part, we find ourselves in a reactionary mode. In other words, we are reacting to the various forces that are assaulting us, attacking us, and running roughshod over us. Now, I'm of an age where I can remember how life was in North America under segregation. And many on this call probably can remember those days as well, and how brutal, how unfair, how dangerous and violent those times were. And now that we have made progress from those days, steady progress up to and through the presidency of Barack Obama, many of us did not think that we would find ourselves in 2024 facing a vicious backlash from white nationalism and white supremacy. While we didn't think that, that's exactly where we are. And so for the last several years, we have witnessed, for example, first it was the attack on critical race theory, which really made no sense because that was a teaching paradigm that was being offered in graduate law schools. In other words, critical race theory was not something that was in the elementary, middle school, or high school curriculums. It was strictly a graduate program for those students pursuing law degrees. And yet and still, that became a mantra of the MAGA right attacking public education. We're not going to have no critical race theory in our schools, blah, blah, blah. And we had to respond to that, not really fully sure why it was even an issue. And then after critical race theory died down, then the next thing we find is we're fighting against this drive to do away with diversity, equity, and inclusion as a way of pursuing a rectification of how we have been excluded from opportunities in the political structure here in North America. So the court systems are now ruling the very battles that we thought we had won, that had opened doors and allowed affirmative action to push us into new positions in business, in education, in government. Now all of a sudden that's being called reverse racism, and laws are being promulgated saying that affirmative action programs are unconstitutional. And so groups are having to fight that fight. But what it points to, Sister Q, in my thought, is that our lack of a revolutionary theory has made us vulnerable to all kinds of assaults. And instead of us being able to focus on our own agenda, we find ourselves backpedaling and trying to protect the gains we thought we had secured. I mean, if the country can overturn Roe v. Wade after it's been on the books for 50 years, that lets us know that nothing is settled in this country. And it dawned on me, I guess, about a decade ago, certainly after reading the writings of Carol Anderson, when she talked about white rage, that for many in North America, and particularly in the South, they have been fighting the Civil War since the 1860s. And when we look at that history of what has been going on in the country since the conclusion of the Civil War, especially after the Reconstruction period, which only lasted from 1865 through about 1877, and then was just overturned with the Dred Scott decision of Dred Scott was 1857. But certainly with the Hayes-Tilden Compromise of 1877, which withdrew the federal troops from the South and allowed the Southern forces to regain control of the South, which ended Reconstruction for our people. So it's clear the forces that waged the Civil War, even though they lost the Civil War militarily, never stopped fighting. And now, once again, they have packed the Supreme Court. They have seized control of the Republican Party. They have smashed elements of the political system. The most egregious example of that, obviously, is January the 6th, where they stormed the Capitol. I mean, it doesn't get any clearer than that. And then, as Donald Trump is campaigning, he's promising to exonerate and to release those January 6th rioters and insurrectionists as if they had not attacked the government. So all of that says to me that we find ourselves in the present moment without a clear analysis of the forces working against us and why, And even more damning, we don't have a comprehensive blueprint to move ourselves forward, not only here in North America, but globally as well, as we witness the China and its aggressive moves on the African continent, Russia and their militia operations in certain parts of the African continent. So a lot of the forces working against us are working on their agenda, and what's lacking is us having an agenda that allows us to, A, protect ourselves, and, B, move our own concerns forward. And so I thought tonight, Sister Q, we would explore this subject of how do we arrive at a revolutionary theory. Well, one, do people agree that we do need a revolutionary theory? And then, two, how do we go about the business of constructing such a theory so that we can seize control and direction of our movement and bring about the desired results rather than continuing to just be on defense and try to push back against the various attacks that's coming to us. So that's my thinking, Sister Q, and I would like to talk about a couple of things because it's interesting to me that we have the ingredients of a revolutionary theory. We just have to put them together strategically so that it results in a comprehensive and effective plan. Am I making sense?
Yes, absolutely. Particularly as you went through various activities that have taken place over time, and it's clear that we are not focused on what we need to do or focused on a plan that gets us to not just keep your head down and keep working instead of
right.
running over here for that fire, running over there for that fire, running over there for
exactly.
the whatever. Just keep your head
right.
down, keep working, and progress your own agenda. And I think
right.
that's very key.
Right.
Thank you for that.
So I think one of the key lessons learned in the national liberation struggle that was waged on both the African continent and here in North America, certainly on the African continent, people like Kwame Nkrumah, Sekou Touré, they were very clear that the problem that faced the African continent coming out of the colonial period was neocolonialism. In other words, these formerly colonized countries, and I probably need to put a pin there and say something about that. Africa currently has 54 countries.
Mm-hmm.
These countries are artificially drawn boundaries by the European powers. Going back to the Berlin Conference of 1884-85, the European countries got together in Berlin and divided up the continent of Africa into various territories that they would control. And so that's how we got the boundaries that we have of Nigeria and Ghana and Kenya and all of these African nations. Those are artificial
mm-hmm.
boundaries drawn by European power. So even the national liberation struggle itself, colonialism, had an underlying structure. So these countries gained their independence from Britain and from France and from Germany and from Portugal and Belgium. They got what we, looking back in retrospect, would call flag independence. So they had a flag, they had their own anthem, they took over the seats of government, They threw the former European rulers out, and they took over those office buildings, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the economic infrastructure in all of those countries remained intact. So the currency, the banking system, all of the monetary institutions that were controlled by the former European powers still operated the same. They might have a black chairman of the board or a black CEO here and there, but the institutions themselves still functioned in the same way. So that even though they had independence, and you can put air quotes around independence, the actual power and the ability to control their own natural resources and their own labor and their own value was still being controlled by these European powers. And so it was clear that on the African continent, the struggle was against neocolonialism, and a struggle, by the way, which still rages today. We have not, African people, by and large, have not won the struggle against neocolonialism. That is the actual control of these countries by European forces. And as we witness the various revolutions that are, well, I don't know if I should call them revolution. Let's call them coup d'etats that's taking place in Niger, in Burkina Faso, in these formerly French colonial states mm-hmm. that now have thrown the French out, for the most part by military overthrow. But the question remains, how will the economics of those countries change? Will they sever their right. connections to France and Britain and Belgium and the countries that will they break from the central bank of France? All of these questions are up in the air. And will they be able to return to civilian government again? Or will they be ruled by these military dictatorships, which is not a democratic formation? And ultimately, who will these dictators serve? And so these questions are still up in the air. And here in our own country, in North America, while we don't have that exact kind of structure taking place, we have witnessed the rise of people in blackface who are pushing, for the most part, a Republican agenda. So you know, we've got Blacks for Trump, for example. We've got Tim Scott, the senator in South Carolina, who are riding this Republican wave. The worst example, of course, would be Clarence Thomas. But they're basically doing the bidding of their white masters, at great detriment to the masses of our people, I might add. And so I think the need is obvious and is very clear. Before we can effectively address the physical reality, the material reality that we find ourselves in, our African ancestors would suggest that we go within and do the mental work necessary so that we can change the structures that we're using to wage the fight that we find ourselves in. And so I want to suggest, for example, that when we talk about a revolutionary theory, I would suggest one of the things that we have to look at first is the need for an African world view or an African ideology, or to make it maybe easier to understand for an American audience, an African theology, because it's the ideas that ultimately control where our energy goes and what it accomplishes. And so when we say an African worldview, in other words, most of us, even whether we have a cell phone or a computer, when we turn the computer on and, you know, the screen comes on and it allows us to do whatever it is we need to do, whether it's check email, do a spreadsheet, create a Word document, all of the things that we do on a computer, those are just software applications. What enables the computer to do its computing is the operating system. You don't pay it much attention until there's a problem with your computer and you go online to get help, and the first thing the help desk asks you is, what operating system is your computer using? Windows 11, Windows 10, if it's a Mac or an Apple, it's, you know, what is your operating system? And that is the role that ideology plays in the social setting. In other words, what is the operating system that guides behavior in North America? And basically, it's the ideology of white supremacy. We may not be comfortable saying it that way, but that's basically the truth of the matter. Even something as simple as the language we're communicating in. What language is this that we're using tonight? It's English.
English.
You know, it's not Twi. It's, you know, it's not Hausa. It's not Igbo. It's not an African tongue. It's English. And why does the majority of the world's people communicate in English? The French philosopher Frantz Fanon says, when you take on a language, you take on a worldview. And so I want all of us to pause just for a moment and think about the implications of that. When we take on a language, we take on a worldview, because the grammar structures how we think about things, and the vocabulary provides the definitions to talk about things. So our problem is deep. Not only do we have to think differently for the moment, we have to think differently, but we are still encumbered by the language of our oppressor. We'll work through that. Until we can develop our own language. But I think that highlights part of our dilemma, recognition that most of us are operating in a system of white supremacy, white nationalism as our ideological framework. Now, there's no shame on us. I mean, that's just what it is. But part of our work and struggle, if we really are to free ourselves and regain our position of greatness in the world, we have to do the work of advancing an ideological framework that is African at its core. In other words, we have to develop an African worldview, an African operating system, so to speak. And so that means we have to be thinking about what language would be better for us to communicate in. We have to think about redefining the terms of how we behave towards each other. And for example, the work that we and Us Lifting Us have been doing for the last decade has made us clearly aware of the fact that the moment we start talking about economic freedom for our people, and if we open the phone lines and say, well, you know, how do we move forward economically, much of what we will hear will be various plans for how we can build capitalistic businesses. It's easy to envision, so we think about if we think about a major corporation, let's just say AT&T, for example, the phone system, right? we think about, okay, we get a black person who becomes the CEO, the head of of AT&T, and instead of that money flowing into white pockets, that profit flows into black pockets. And we would think that that would be a solution that would work. Well, except for the fact, well, where does the profit come from to begin with? Well, the profit comes from the exploitation of the workers. So we realize then that, just having a black business doesn't automatically free us if the black business is doing the same thing the white business were doing, except it's being done by black people instead of white people. Mm-hmm. And so that's why Us Lifting Us puts forward the plan to build a cooperative business enterprise rather than a capitalistic business enterprise. For us, then it's family-centered group ownership of the means of production. Now, that's a revolutionary thought. Many of our people are struggling to understand what in the hell are we talking about? Group ownership and family-centered and African value-driven, you know. Let's just make some money, man. What are you talking about? So the challenge becomes, for example, when we talk about flipping real estate as a way of generating wealth for ourselves. And so there's this whole wave of entrepreneurs who are being taught how to purchase properties, rehab them, put them back on the market, and sell them for a profit. And that's how you become a wealthy business person in this economy. We ask the question, well, who owns the land? And from the African value perspective, we understand that the land belongs to the creator who put it here in the first place. And so we see the Africans see themselves as stewards of the land. That is, we are responsible for the land, but we can't sell the land. We can't possess the land. We are custodians of the land. We make sure that everyone in the village or everyone in the nation has access to sufficient land to farm and to do what they need to do to survive and to live. Idea of putting a fence around a plot of real estate and saying, I own this and I'm going to sell it to you for this amount of money, that's a European notion. That's why, for example, indigenous peoples, both on the continent and here in North America, had a very different relationship to land. They moved across the land. They made sure that they took care of the land, the water, the air, so that it was clean, that they didn't disturb the ecological balance of the land. And as a result, the planet was healthy. Along come the Europeans, and they have to conquer the land. And so they extract its mineral wealth. They pollute the water. They pollute the air. And in a couple of decades, the soil has lost its vitality. The waterways are clogged and unfit for drinking purposes. The air is filled with smog, and we call this progress. So that's what we mean when we say we have to develop a different worldview, takes into account the wisdom of African people in terms of how do we live on the land in community? How do we share the abundance of the planet in ways that allows everyone to live healthy and whole and productive lives? This idea that people are houseless and are seeking shelter under bridges, that is an alien idea. I was talking to a relative, a friend of a cousin of mine who lives in New York, and they were talking about the crisis of the migrants that are in these large cities now. And where on the subway platforms you might see a 14-year-old girl holding a baby asking for money, or long lines snaking around the corner as people have lined up to get food allocations or handouts or something like that. All of this very bizarre ways of people being exploited. In the capitalist system, this is, well, you know, they didn't make the right decision, and, you know, that's what happens to poor people. No, that's a sign that this society has a very profound sickness. When we can look in the eyes of another human being, see their suffering, and not feel moved to do something about that. That's something very wrong has gone on inside of ourselves if that's how we're moving. And then we think, well, this problem is too big, I can't do anything about it myself. But that's why we are part of organizations that can recognize that this is not the way human beings are supposed to live. And we have to find whatever structural systems are creating this and dismantle those and put in place structures and systems that allow the resources of the planet to be shared more fully and more abundantly. Now, you know, you say things like that and people cringe. Well, that, you know, because we have grown to be very individualistic. As long as I got a roof over my head and my kids are fed and I can ride in the car of my choice, it's all good for a while. but the bill is going to come due on that. So let me suggest then that the first system that I would suggest we become thoroughly adept at is understanding Ma'at at its deepest levels. Now, Ma'at, we know, is truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. You wanted to say something, Sister Q?
We have a caller on the line, a hand up. So
yep.
Do you want to finish your thought first and then take the call, or do you want to take the call now?
Before I get into this, I want to launch that conversation around Ma'at, so let's go ahead and hear the caller's response, and then we'll proceed into talking about Ma'at.
Okay, caller with the last four digits, 3429, please state your name, where you're calling from, and make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes. Good evening. Name is Stubbs, and I'm calling from Florida. And I was just listening. Good evening. And I was just listening. And, of course, and I agree with most of what was being said. I definitely agree 100% with the spirit of what's being said. But I just wanted to, I don't know if an update is needed or, you know, news flash or, but there's another paradigm and ideology afoot in Black America as it pertains to, particularly from, I'm Generation X, and the generations, millennials and Generation Z, will probably have a little pushback just on the concept of adapting an African-centered value system and African identity and all of that. You know, we're proud Black Americans, and we can do everything that we need to do as Black Americans here in America and lead the world once we get our situation straight. We don't need to adopt any other languages. We have our own language. A lot of people don't know. We have Tutnis, AAVE. We have our own languages. And of course, and those languages were used, and they were coded languages used to protect us in the early days when we were at our most vulnerable. So, but everything else I can rock with, but just do know, and because as things stand today, the African value system seems to be to leave Africa and migrate to and come into Western countries that we seem to, you know, bemoan them. And of course, we know the Western countries, we know the devilment that they've caused worldwide, but the fact is that we are Western. You know, we're Black Americans, we are Western, and we can't undo what we are. You know, we have an ethnogenesis here. We have epigenetics here, and of course, and we need to, just get on code to do everything that you know that the brother's speaking of. But we don't have to, you know, search for some ancestral ties that's been broken hundreds of times, many years ago. Our ethnogenesis is here. And of course, and we're doing a lot of that work. A lot of it isn't publicized, but you know, we're doing a lot of that work. We're cooperating.
Let me ask you this, brother. I appreciate your comment.
Yes.
What would you, for example, are you familiar with our celebration of Kwanzaa?
I am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
and
sir.
Do you know what the principles of Kwanzaa are?
Yep, I know every principle. We have a Kwanzaa festival where I'm at, and you know, Kwanzaa, and the reason that we engage in Kwanzaa is because it has some good community building values, and of course, and Kwanzaa was a creation of a Black American. You know, Dr. Karenga was a Black American, and so,
How did he arrive at the formulation of the principles of Kwanzaa?
Well, Kwanzaa's not perfect, and of course but like all holidays, though people try to say it's made up, I push back. All holidays are made up technically. I'm familiar with that, but I don't agree. And like I said, there are some value. He tried to blend African American values with African practices, languages. You know, he had his own remix to try to create this universal Blackness, which was good in spirit. I don't knock Kwanzaa, but I'm just simply saying, you know, we're Black Americans, and of course,
well,
to try to be anything
say,
else
we're Black
is
Americans. What is a Black American?
We became American when those Africans sold us, marched us around the tree of forgiveness, made us drink from the fountain of forgiveness.
Okay.
Sold us over here to America.
It was Africans who sold us, and that's how we got to be America.
It was called the slave trade. A willing buyer and a willing seller.
Okay.
Can,
I got you, brother.
Can
I
interject
you.
Here?
You, please do.
Go ahead.
I thank you. Stubbs, is that your name? Right? Thank you helping. Now, my question for you is, you said that you're Generation X?
X, yes, ma'am.
Gen X? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Could you clarify for me, please, what group is classified as Gen X? Because I hear the different millennial, Gen X, Gen Z, Alpha, whatever, but...
Sure.
What age?
Yeah, Gen X, those born after 1965, between 1966 to 1980, are Generation X. The generation before us, which I'm presuming is your generation, my mother's generation and parents' generation, that's the baby boomers. Their period is from 45 to up to when to our generation, to 65, 66. And then before that, then everybody else prior to that, Dr. King and them, they were what you call the silent generation. And then the generation after us, 80 to like 2000, that's the millennials. And then the Gen Zers is the 2000s.
Based on what you have seen and what you have experienced in your lifetime, that brings you to the conclusion that you come to regarding what needs to be done and what you can do.
I've lived long enough. I've got some lived experience. I'll be 54 next month.
Okay, got you. Thank you for your contribution. Brother Angti, we have another caller, so I'm going to let Mrs. Stubbs go and bring on the next caller. Let's see. How do I do that? Caller with the last four digits, 4953. Please state your name
you
where
know.
You're calling from and
calling
make your comment or ask your question.
Yeah, I make a comment and ask a question, man. I'm calling from the Delta region. I wasn't going to speak on Kwanzaa, but there's no way in the world I would follow something that Mr. Karenga, who tortured black women by hanging them upside down, waterborne their vagina with a water.
Okay, you know
Hello?
What's going on, Sister Q?
What happened?
He got
Excuse
his
me?
Phone got disconnected.
Oh.
His phone got disconnected.
Oh, should I try to bring him back?
No. You know, okay.
His phone
here's part of what's going on is there are groups of people who troll black stations and inject in them information that's false and incorrect as a way of sowing confusion and division. You tune on to any black talk radio show, and eventually somebody's going to call in. For example, the brother that wants to talk about, he's a black American. Black doesn't connect you with a culture. It just identifies your phenotype, right? To say that you're American ties you to this white settler colonial project that murdered the indigenous population here and then kidnapped our ancestors and brought us here. So that's precisely the point that I'm making about us needing a revolutionary theory, which helps us to understand who we are as a people. We live in America, but our roots, our culture, our heritage is African. Now, yes, we have done certain things while we are here in North America, but in terms of our beingness, we're Africans. And when we run across people who want to label us as black Americans, that's an ideological agenda at play, and we have to recognize that as such. And it leaves us at the mercy of mimicking what white folks have done. You know, they're saying, well, white folks have done it, we can do it, and we can do it better. But that's not the goal. The goal is to restore ourselves as a whole people. And in order to do that, we have to recapture our culture as well. So, and it was our culture that gave us the strength and the genius and is at the root of who we are. So for example, the builders of the pyramids were the same people who developed mathematics, astronomy, astrology, who laid the foundations for science and medicine. And so as we understand that science, that technology, and we embrace that, we discover in that learning, in those teachings, the scientific notions that can carry us into the next century. So we don't want to throw that out. And to spend time talking about Generation X and Generation Y and all of that is confusing the issue. We have to come to an understanding of who we are as a people. When, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, you know, Malcolm X was having conversations with people, and they said, I ain't left nothing in Africa. And Malcolm would reply, why, you left your mind in Africa. Because that the Kwanzaa principles developed by Dr. Karenga, he developed them after studying many, many cultures on the African continent. So the idea of emoji didn't just fall out of the sky. As he moved around the continent of Africa, engaged with different communities and different villages and different nations, he recognized that consistent with all of these people was this concept of oneness. It's not just about being one people. It's the idea that the entire universe is one. And when we understand the oneness of the universe, then we begin to understand that we can't operate independent of the cosmic laws that govern the universe. We have to live in harmony with the universe, and it's the fact that current civilization, especially Western civilization, is out of harmony with the cosmic laws of the universe is why we're having the problems that we're seeing. That is at the root of global warming, for example. We've extracted carbon fuels out of the earth, have spewed them into the atmosphere, and now the planet is overheating, and we're seeing these bizarre weather patterns, droughts in some areas, high temperatures in other areas, floods and tornadoes and earthquakes. All of this is a result of Western culture run amok. And so Mother Earth is attempting to rebalance the planet and is using people who appreciate and respect this indigenous wisdom to bring them to the forefront to once again provide leadership so that we as a people can go forward, not only African people on the continent in North America, but for the people on the planet, period. We are facing a global crisis, and now it's become exacerbated. We see how bizarre it has become in terms of what's being done to the people in Gaza. We see the upheavals taking place on the African continent. All of this is the outworkings of Western ideology that is driven by this insane hyper-individualism, where people can disconnect themselves from the well-being of their neighbors and somehow not understand where that leads. So when we say unity, we're not only talking about unity in the family, in the community, in the race, in the nation. We're talking about unity on the planet, this idea of self-determination. Now, it's a clear example. If you're practicing Kuji Chagulia, you don't call yourself a Black American. There's nothing self-defining about that concept. You call yourself who you are. You're an African. You know, if you've done your DNA, and you might even be able to trace yourself back to the original village and tribe that you came from. But by no means do you stop at defining yourself as a Black American when what is really American are these white settlers that came over from Europe, killed the indigenous population, enslaved African folk. If that's what you want to connect yourself to, go right ahead. I don't think that's a formula for healthy living. So, but let me get back to, I wanted to talk about Ma'at as a system of beginning the work of developing a revolutionary theory. So Ma'at, truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. When we have internalized those words and those concepts so that's actually what becomes our internal operating system, that's a whole different consciousness in terms of how we move on the planet, how we relate to one another. The other thing that I now we're familiar with Ma'at. Well, let's just say we've heard the term. We need to do a whole lot more work to fully understand what the concept that Ma'at brings to our understanding. We've heard of the term Tree of Life, and Ma'at is just one of the principles on the Tree of Life. It is the one that gives us the order of the universe, and that's why it's so critical, and that's why we use it as our starting point. But what we really have to do is understand the entire African philosophical system, of which Ma'at is the expression that most of us are understanding right now. The other piece that I wanted to share, we're not going to have time to do it. Let me just say, though, that in terms of Ma'at, that is one of the core values that helps to shape how we build Us Lifting Us as a cooperative economic development community. Because one of the things that we learned from Mwalimu Julius Nyerere was that the word Ujamaa was taken because it means familyhood. So what we are talking about as we think about economics for ourselves is we're talking about, first of all, we see ourselves as family, and we are learning how to do commerce and business with each other in a way that is respectful and honoring of the fact that we are family, that at the root of our being, we are connected. And that when we think about Ma'at, the Ma'at is the what Ra'u Nefer Amen calls the is love, which is the executive force of the universe. So in other words, we are not driven by a profit motive, we're driven by a love motive. And we are structuring a community and a world that is designed to help each person to reach their full potential, to harness the resources of the planet, to put a floor under every person so that food, clothing, shelter, energy, and all that is necessary to sustain ourselves is available so that no child is hungry or uneducated, that no one is without shelter, that all have the opportunity to grow in healthy ways. That's the kind of social structure we want to design. And in order to do that, we have to build a different kind of economy. Sister Q, we're right at a few minutes before 10. Let me stop and see if you want to raise any questions or make any comments.
No, I do not have anything right now. There are no hands up on the board. I think I think that the presentation of the revolutionary theory that you presented was very informative. And based on the questions and the comments that we got tonight, gaps to bridge, I think.
We do. But I think what I'm hearing, Sister Q, is it's called trolling. Some are being done by bots. In other words, they're just AI programs that, that mimic humans. And they're on Facebook, they're on social media, they're on radio talk shows. Mm-hmm. Others are, they're actual human beings, but they're working from a script. You know, so they start off, oh, yeah, I like what you're saying. You got it right on. I want to give a little pushback right here. We're Black Americans.
Right.
We're not Africans. And so, but make no mistake, it's a pattern. You'll hear that not only on our airwave. You turn on any radio talk where people get to call in and express a view.
Mm-hmm.
The show is trying to help people come to Afrocentric thinking, you'll hear those kinds of comments. And the last guy talking about, I don't hear nothing Melania Kring that I can say. He was raping women and blah, you know, just getting all crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the energy. But that's an organized attack on this platform so we can't talk about the African principles. You follow what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
It's coordinated. Yeah. It's not accidental. I used to think that, you know, these were just people listening and they, you know, kind of misinformed. And, you know, what they don't want us to do is to lay out what we're saying in a very clear and concise way so that the people who are listening can grasp it. They want to jump in the middle of it and start throwing around a lot of contradictory terms to create confusion.
And so just watch as we go forward, as we're talking about economic, the cooperative building, and we open the lines, we'll hear more and more of those kinds of comments, because that's part of the attack against us organizing ourselves and moving into a different consciousness, if you follow what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying, and I thank you very much for that. Because you mentioned that it's trolling done on particular types of programming. I don't know.
Well, trolling is widespread,
but
across
I'm getting what you're
all
saying.
Social media platforms.
Yes, well, that's part of my. Well, I'm not on social media, so all of this is new to me. I'm just thinking it's regular people. That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
but I thank
well,
you for the
is,
clarification.
Some of it
I
is,
thank you for the clarification.
But some of it is very deliberate and orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
Make no doubt about that.
Right.
It's deliberate and
yeah.
it's orchestrated. It's kind of like back in the day, we'd be having a community meeting, and there would always be one or two want to jump up in the middle of the meeting and kind of take it off point
into a different gotcha.
You know, I mean, they would be dressed. I mean, they would have on the garb and they would have the language down. But you know, they would always wind up taking the meeting off in a different direction. Same thing.
Gotcha.
Same thing. COINTELPRO
gotcha.
In gotcha. You know, 2024.
And thank you for
know,
that
but,
clarification for me, as you know. So thank you, Brother Auntie, for tonight's program, especially the idea of a revolutionary theory and why it's important. We want to thank everyone that joined us this evening, and we invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace, sister.
Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sound. Don't you know, we're talking about a revolution sound. While they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sound. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? People gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution. Talking about a revolution, oh no. Talking about a revolution.